What's happening across Connecticut? Melissa in the Morning's conversation with Governor Ned Lamont. Now on WICC 600.
Let's see. Governor Lamont, are we connected this morning?
I sure hope so.
There you are. Yes, I can hear you now. How are you?
We're doing great. I hope you're doing good.
Yes, I was very excited about your announcement yesterday. I was like, oh, he's doing this for me. I'm just kidding. But your announcement of upping the eligibility for the vaccine to 16 plus starting next Thursday, very exciting.
I was thinking about you.
Yeah. Well, thank you. I knew it. We did have a question, though, which is a good question from one of our listeners about distributing it to students. You've got that 16 to 18 age bracket in there. Will there be closed clinics specifically for students? Or are they also doing kind of like the general public going to clinics based on either VAMS or whichever healthcare provider they use?
So here it is, Melissa. This is a big group, 16 to 45. So frankly, I would urge younger folks just to slow down a little bit unless they've got some risk conditions. Allow those who are a little bit older to get there first. So when it comes to students, show up if you think there's a need, you think maybe you're at some risk. Otherwise, we are going to be getting to students and colleges in a more directed way over the course of the next few weeks.
Okay. Thank you. We appreciate that. Like I said, big, big announcement. And I actually dove into pretty much all of our COVID questions with Dr. Gifford. She was on earlier this morning. So she kind of took COVID away from you. So there you go. So I'm going to do more of like general Connecticut policy questions, if you don't mind. I'm going to take questions from people and throw them at you. Are you ready?
It's just pretty good. She knows her stuff, doesn't she?
Right. Yeah. No, she was really great, comprehensive. It was nice. She's now lined up actually where she comes on a half hour before you every other week as well. So it's really nice because she can kind of handle the COVID stuff and then it allows you to sort of focus more on what's going on in Connecticut outside the pandemic. So it works out very nicely, actually. I'm very happy about it. There you go. So first and foremost, I'm sure you have heard about this. Multiple news sources are kind of blowing up this quote from your interview with NPR earlier this week. Some Republican senators are calling the statement racist, pairing NASCAR to white male Republicans. Do you want to clarify what you meant by your statement?
Yeah, I was just having a little fun, Melissa, but I was saying there are some demographics who are a little more reluctant to get vaccinated. When it comes to the African-American population, we're really working very closely with ministers who say something from the pulpit. Then we have the mobile van right outside. We're joking that some of the young male Republicans have been a little slow to get vaccinated as well. That's why it was so important that Donald Trump say, get your vaccination. It's really important. And then when it comes to those so-called vaccination passports, you know, we were saying, hey, look, perhaps if NASCAR required a vaccination passport, you'd have more people vaccinated. So just having some fun.
Okay, so for people who feel like you don't care for the Republican Party, this was a clear jab to the Republicans. That's not what you're saying.
No, take a breath. We're just having some fun.
Okay. Now, I do want to talk a little bit about the Republican Party here in Connecticut, Governor Lamont. Just so you know, I have state senators on both sides of the aisle on my show. For example, on Monday, Senator Duff comes on, and then right after him is Senator Wong. So I try to always get both sides of the story, what's going on in Hartford. But consistently, I have to say, it keeps being brought to my attention that Republicans are left out of meetings. They're handed bills with very little turnaround time to digest it and debate it. Their ideas are not being heard. For example, I learned that the Senate GOP health option bill that just died yesterday without any vote. What are you doing to maybe stop this one party rule in silencing the Republicans or even unaffiliated voters who feel like they voted these representatives in and they're just being disregarded?
Yeah, I don't believe a word of that, actually. Legislature got into session 2.5 months ago. If they don't like any of the executive orders, please step up and vote on some changes. If you think we ought to open all the bars tomorrow, vote to do so. Fortunately, they did say, hey, let's keep outdoor dining open, and they voted on that yesterday. So it's their opportunity anytime they want to step in and opine on the executive orders. Paul Mounds, my chief of staff, myself, we talk to the leadership all the time. They're testifying virtually every day these days before the committees. And I'm pretty accessible. I love the points of view from both sides of the aisle. So, you know, please reach out. Don't reach out by a press release. Just give me a call.
So just for example, so like when Senator Huang says on the air that there are closed door meetings and no Republicans were included, that's a lie?
A lie. I have a feeling that every once in a while I talk to the Democratic leadership, but every once in a while I talk to the Republican leaders and no Democrats on the phone. So, but I'm happy to sit down with, if the Republicans want to come into my office and sit down, they want to do it with Democratic leaders, that's great. I've got an open door policy. I got a big table and I welcome it. A little more complicated these days because nobody's in the building. So let's do it by Zoom.
We're talking to Governor Lamont. We're taking your questions on everything going on here in Connecticut. Now, my understanding and many of our listeners' understanding, Governor, is the mansion tax has kind of made its way back into a different bill, which is a push to have a tax put on people's homes or businesses that value at least $300,000 or more. You actually said on the show, I'm not signing that. That's ridiculous. So why is it still being proposed?
Oh, because we have... We have legislators, and it's their opportunity to propose bills. Then it goes through a lot of hearings and a lot of process. Then it's then we negotiate something like that with the governor's office before it comes to me. But look, Melissa, we're getting $10 billion from the federal government over the next couple of years. We're going to be doing a lot in terms of social services, a lot in terms of municipal aid, a lot more for our kids, especially those kids who haven't been in school for 9 months, in terms of the services and camp and the such. So I don't think there's any need to raise taxes for the sake of raising taxes. So I'm not supportive of that.
Yeah. I mean, I just think, I guess my thing is it's a little sneaky that, like, you said that and they were like, okay, great, then we're going to take it away. But then it just sort of snuck its way back in again. Like, why aren't we on the same page with that? I guess it's just a little sneaky from, like, a resident perspective.
Well, the legislature goes through, you know, people have a chance to put an amendment on a bill. People have a chance. Just remind all your listeners, there are hundreds and hundreds of bills, all of which are proposed by different state senators and state representatives. Most of them never see the light of day. And if they do see the light of day, they go through a lot of changes as more and more stakeholders weigh in.
My ears kind of perked up earlier this week in my newscast, Governor, because New York, as you know, just passed legal recreational marijuana. So I have to imagine that's just more fuel for us to pass it here in Connecticut, no?
Look, I think it is. We got people from northern Connecticut. They drive up to Massachusetts. They're big billboards 30 miles away. You go to the dispensaries, I'm told, up in Massachusetts, loaded with Connecticut plates, and within 6 months, it's going to be the same in New York. I want a carefully regulated market. I don't want the underground market taking over distribution of marijuana. I think that would be dangerous. And I see no reason to surrender this market to out-of-staters. So I'd like to think the legislature is taking this up, doing it seriously. We've got a very specific bill on the table. And, you know, I'd love to see some Republicans step up. I mean, that used to be the party of libertarians and, you know, get the government off our backs and our personal lives. So perhaps some of them will help us craft this bill so it makes sense.
It seems like the only roadblock that I'm hearing from Republicans, Governor, is that the address concerning drivers high behind the wheel, giving police a tool so they could test people accurately and then have proof that will hold up in court. How are we addressing that? Because I know they continue to look at studies at other states, and once they kind of legalize recreational marijuana, you do see upticks in car accidents, things like that. So how are we addressing that? That seems to be the biggest roadblock.
Yeah, Melissa, what we're seeing in other states is, and what I hear talking to my police right here in this state, is we have the right to pull over anybody at any time for erratic driving. And generally, or often there's something in their system. It could, and it's often a mix of legal drugs, alcohol, maybe marijuana. Those are the things that often cause the erratic driving. We pull them over, we find them, and we can deal with that seriously. I think there also, if there's more severe cases, there'll be ways to test to see if there's, you know, marijuana in the bloodstream. But that's less important than being able to get dangerous drivers off the road.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know, I'm sure you're getting some controversy surrounding what a lot of people are just now commonly calling the gas tax. I understand, obviously, the need for the money to then go back towards infrastructure needs. I think one of I'm just curious about this because there are some people who have come out and have said that this actually isn't going to make a huge difference environmentally, which is why not all states are on board with it on the East Coast. So I would love to know your thoughts on that. But then on top of it, people are just wondering, like, how many times are we going to see the gas tax go up here in Connecticut when you're big on not raising taxes?
Yeah, exactly. The Transportation Climate Initiative, look, gasoline prices, Melissa, have gone from $2 to $4, back down to $3. They bounce around as oil companies control the supply based upon demand for drivers. So from that point of view, we thought a small fee on carbon, which cannot exceed 5 cents for the first few years, and cannot exceed 9 cents over 10 years, very strict about that. Would discourage some people from buying more gas, maybe lead to more, electric cars, and also raise us about $90 million, which we can use to, support public transportation, get more people out of cars on the road. And it's coupled with the highway user fee from the trucks, the exact same thing that the New York State does. So that allows us to be able to access the money when Mayor Pete Buttigieg does the infrastructure bill, so Connecticut can be at the front of the line and have recurring revenues that allow us to speed up and safen our roads and bridges.
If you recognize the voice on WICC right now, that's because it's our governor, Governor Ned Lamont, who's here live on WICC. Governor Lamont, we are a week now into the relaxed restrictions, opening up more capacity for restaurants, houses of worship, other businesses, upping capacity numbers for venues and for events. All good things. We're doing pretty good, a week into it. We'll see how that goes. But my question for you, Governor, is I was curious, so you've got a venue, let's just say, for a wedding, and you're allowed to have up to 200 people outdoors. You're allowed to have, a good amount of people indoors. Why can't we open the State House?
Of course, that's controlled by the legislature. I have no say over that. I'm a guest in there, a State House, actually. But I think probably the leadership thinks at this point, the Zoom public hearings where you maybe have, 1,000 people want to opine on something, rather than have everybody pack into a hearing room, it makes some sense to do that via Zoom a little bit longer. My instinct is, short of those big public hearings, I think you'll probably have more people coming back in the building over the next month or two. Look, Melissa, we're going to have everybody who wants to get vaccinated within, a month, 6 weeks. So I think certainly at that point, I would expect more people in the building.
But my understanding, Governor, is are lawmakers back?
Lawmakers are in session right now. They've been in session since early January.
But I mean via Zoom, though, or are they in person?
What they do is via Zoom.
Okay, they're still via Zoom. Okay, because there were concerns regarding, with the Zoom hearings, 25% of Connecticut, I think this was in one of your press conferences, 25% of Connecticut does not have access to Wi-Fi or a functioning computer. So that kind of takes them out of giving their voices, which I totally understand. Big crowds, that's certainly something we're trying to avoid. But even in some capacity, we're still not hearing from 25% of Connecticut if they want to speak on any of these matters with Zoom.
Yeah, I think, driving an hour and a half from Fairfield County probably discourages public participation even more. I think Zoom has probably opened up access, which I think is a good thing. But to your bigger point, look, you ought to be able to do both. I think our schools are going to be mainly in classroom, but there's always going to be a virtual feature forever. I think our State House is going to be in person. I think that those dynamics are important. But I hope there's always going to be a virtual Zoom aspect as well. For those that can't make that long drive up to Hartford, they still have a chance to have their voices heard.
Are they going to, at some point, stop doing the 24-hour cutoffs with these public hearings? Because it's my understanding that that never was something that we did before, were these 24-hour time caps, because there are hundreds of people who are not getting their voices heard, even with Zoom in the hearings.
Yeah, that's certainly up to the legislative chairman. They make that call. But to your bigger point, you're right, on Zoom, all of a sudden you don't have 200 people want to testify. You have 1,000 people want to testify. And some of these hearings have gone on, you know, round the clock for 24 hours. So I'm told that in some situations, the chairman has said, it's been 24 hours. Anybody else, please send in an email. But if that's not good enough, continue the hearings. I'm with you.
Okay. And then I have two very, very separate questions that actually like are not in news headlines. These are just kind of more personal questions from people. Linda wrote in saying, is there anything being done to stop, reduce or enforce the law better against extremely dangerous high speed drivers on our highways? I think we've talked about this before, but this was a question that just came up, if there was anything further happening.
Well, I can tell you the police are monitoring this very carefully, especially during the peak of COVID. You probably remember that our roads were empty, but driving fatalities went up.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because people were driving like a bat out of hell.
Yes.
And some people were. In fact, I'm told there was even some races from Maine to Florida. So our police are taking that very seriously. More and more cars are on the road now. It is dangerous, and I got to urge and remind people, it's not just your safety, it's the safety of those pedestrians and those around you.
Yeah, amen to that. And then my last question, Governor, and then I'll let you go. A call came in this morning. I don't have the name of this gentleman, but he says he was a whistleblower who filed a complaint 15 years ago. He says he has since contacted the attorney general. He's still waiting on the investigation results, but the investigation ended a few years back. He said, is there any statute of limitations on whistleblower complaints? And if so, do whistleblowers have the right to be contacted about what came out of the complaint after an investigation ends?
Man, that's really specific.
It is, right? Yeah.
Laura Dennehy and William Tong, I should ask. My instinct is, if he blew the whistle 15 years ago and there's been an investigation and nothing has come of it, probably nothing is going to come of it. But I'm not sure about the exact statute of limitations. I would think if new information came up that was relevant to that case, it would be heard.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I certainly can try to get more details for you and pass it along to you via email. But Governor Lamont, always a pleasure. Thank you for taking all of our questions. And we will talk again in a couple of weeks.
Great to talk to you, Melissa. Thanks, everybody. Be safe.
That is Governor Ned Lamont here on WICC 600.